As a performer, your body is there.
Hi, I'm Mad Kate, and you're listening to Sweat, Sexuality, Work, Extraction, Art, Theatrics. Sweat is a series of conversations about performance and performativity of the sexual and sexualized body at work, where work is broadly defined as the labor of survival, the labor of care, creativity, and capital A art. How exactly do we define our work? And how does that work entangle and circumscribe our sexual identities, our creative lives, and the ways in which we provide care? How do we perform tasks, acts of care, and identities? Anchored in our always already racialized and sexualized bodies, our complex intersectionalities, these conversations are means of relating through work to each other. I hope that they contribute to dialogues which normalize sex work as work and all work as deserving of respect, healthy conditions, and a living wage.
Creating this Black sex worker space is the same as any other Black spaces that have to be created. It had to be created because nobody's making room for us anyplace else. And we need to have our own spaces carved out where it's coming from our history and our ideas and all of this inherited practices for liberation.
This month's guest is the incredible Edible Akinos. The incredible Edible Akinos, or motherfucking Akinos for short, is a show-stopping entertainer who has curated, headlined, and performed in productions from New York to Europe. She is the founder of the Black Sex Worker Collective, author, performance artist, and an educator in the fields of sexuality, HIV, and human rights. I recently caught up with her at Hotels in Berlin, where members of the collective created an intimate environment where they both performed and shared personal stories.
As far as I'm concerned, all the Black sex workers in the world are part of the group. They just haven't come here yet. BSWC is where people can come and incubate their ideas. You know, they can come here and be able to, like, put their ideas to life.
The incredible Edible Akinos is a member of several sex worker-led organizations where she's lobbied in New York State against condoms as evidence and helped make recommendations on human rights policies at the UN. Her one-woman show, Black Pussy, the scripted web series Chronicles of a Black Ho, and the social whore commentary web series Whore Logic need your support and attention.
I'm the incredible Edible Akinos. I'm a burlesque show stripper and a cooker of good food, I think. And I run the Black Sex Worker Collective, a global organization based in the U.S. with branches in Berlin and South Africa, West Africa. I'm a community activist, organizer for sex worker rights, labor rights, the rights of Black people, migrants, all people that are forced at the margins of despair because of oppression and patriarchy and capitalism. And I'm a performance artist, and I curate shows, and I do a lot of things because I'm Jamaican, and we can never just have one job. We have to have 10 jobs. So I got 10 jobs. I'm a lifelong artist. That's been embedded in my soul since I was very young. I've always been like dancing and creating showcases in my mind. That's something that can never stop. And I notice when it hasn't effect, when I haven't done it in a while, it actually affects my mood. So yeah, totally.
How do you feel your identity as an artist is tied to your work? Because as a fellow artist, like, I know sometimes art doesn't bring me money. I'm curious what that relationship is for you.
Like, the performing arts doesn't bring me much money. I feel like maybe the last couple of years was the first time I got some money from it, because I received like a grant to, you know, to like do some of the shows that I'm doing right now.
Great.
But for the most part, it doesn't really bring in anything. I spend a lot more than I bring in, but I'm not necessarily doing it for the money, but also it's like at some point it's like, when do I make money? So I kind of, you know, just am creating it on my own terms. You know, I have to create my own spaces and create it on my own terms. And it's an interesting relationship. And I mean, it's who I am, you know, like people know me as being an artist, but a lot of people don't get a chance to see me on stage too much these days because I'm doing my art in different ways too. You know, like I connected with my food now, which is super important. And to try to, there's like an artistic element to the food, like connecting it to different forms of mainstream art or like popular art, like mainstream music and entertainment and, you know, some other history. So like being, you know, it's who I am. Being an artist is who I am first and foremost.
When did you feel like you first became a worker?
A worker. Very early on, I would say, in my life. I always like wanted to work. I've always been driven to work, I guess. I don't know. I guess maybe it's something that's embedded in me, because I remember like being super young and being in like these group homes. Let's just call it that. And we would get money to do different chores in the house. At the time, I was pregnant as well, but in the house, like, no, none of these girls wanted to do any chores. And I would just do all of their chores because I wanted money. I was like, I got a baby coming and I want to be able to buy my baby stuff, right? So how are you going to get that if you ain't got no money? So I would work and work and do everybody's chores. And they would laugh at me like, is that the one that be doing everybody chores? And it's just like, I like, people really tried to shame me for wanting to work and make money, you know? So I would say very young, I've always wanted to work, needing my own money, never having money to do what I wanted and needing to have money. And yeah, it's like, how else are you going to do it if you don't get a job? Mm-hmm. You know, grew up in America. So it's not like we had that economy where it was like an exchange of goods and labor, energy for what you need. Yeah, to work. So very early on, at a very young age, always wanted to work, always liked working.
Has your relationship to money changed since that time?
I still like money. I don't save it a lot as much as I would like to. I just spend it. I know there's this whole thing about saving, and that would be nice, but there's also a lot of nice things that I want to have. If I save it, how can I get that? How can I go on those nice trips? How can I have the nice burlesque costumes, the good food, take the Ubers quote unquote unnecessarily? How can I do that if I save the money?
How are you using the food in an artistic context? I'm curious to hear more details about that.
So the first time I did anything with food in Germany, in Berlin, it was about connecting that, like the history of food, right? And the history of food with Black people in particular. So what I did, like the cookout, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, that was the name of the show, which I really need to do again. It was about that connection of how Black people are used as food, teaching about that food history and like bringing together like some of that history, like with popular food brands like Uncle Ben's, and how you see Black people depicted in television, for instance, in that artistic realm to fuel capitalism, right? So that's how it started. But there's so many iterations of that show that can happen, which is like seeing women as food, and like in hip hop culture, how this, particularly the Black male hip hop artists, use the hatred for Black women as a way to feed their pockets and fuel their careers, and kind of how now a lot of the female artists of the last decade, how they have transformed themselves to be the people that are using their sexuality and their bodies as food, you know, food meaning like that's how they eat. You know, like that's how they get money, and that's how they eat. Yeah, I'm trying to make that connection to pop culture. How did the system feed themselves? They had to use Black people as food, and then just kind of like, you know, if like what particular kind of food? Pancakes. We have a whole history of pancakes and the branding of that, and just how the recipe was stolen from Black families or black women. And then that imagery was used on the packaging to sell, to make the food. And let me back up a little bit. The show actually was based loosely off the book, The Delectable Negro. And that book was talking about literally the consumption of Black bodies, literally of Black flesh by white people. That's where it started. So in the first time that I did it, it was just more like exhibition style. But when I do it again, I want to do it a little bit differently, where I, as the dishes are coming out, people are getting that history lesson about the different kinds of food they're eating and like where it came from. And yeah, talking about that.
I just was at Hotels a couple of weeks ago, the show you did here in Berlin, and that was amazing. And there was food served there. There were so many aspects that I loved about that night. And I think one thing that I really enjoy is hearing from performers themselves about their own experiences and seeing them perform. And I think that that's a kind of genre I haven't gotten to see enough of until recently in Berlin. I think I also saw it through stripper stories. And a lot of times I see people perform and then you as a public, like you read whatever you read on a body, but you don't hear from them. You don't hear their voice. And to actually hear voices is so powerful.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times when you hear about sex workers, it's gotten better over the past decade, but once upon a time, people were always talking for us, telling our stories for us in media in any way that they want. And a lot of times as well, media will contact us to get our stories for free and like publish it, own our narrative. I also know in Germany, in a lot of Europe, really, there's very limited space for, you know, our Black bodies to be on stage, especially particularly as sex workers, you know, just with the whole discourse and the legal reforms like that are happening around sex work. So there isn't a lot of spaces that are specifically made for us where we can do our art, you know, have the freedom of expression. So I wanted to make sure that I curated a space for the Black sex workers in the country, really, to be able to have, you know, the freedom to do this art, you know, tell these stories, as well as to get paid for them. Because a lot of times people are taking our stories and we're not getting compensated for it, you know? You see as well in mainstream media where there's a lot of people that are like able to depict us and make millions of dollars depicting us in television, but we will never get that space. We'll never get that opportunity. You know, like we're always overlooked, but it's fine to pretend to be us on TV and be a millionaire and people love the mainstream artists for that. But we don't, you know, we don't get that kind of love and praise and have those avenues paved for us where we can make even more money, right? So this is just an avenue for us to be able to do that. Like it's created for us, by us, and we get to control what the audience sees, what they hear. And yeah, I wanted to make sure that this was, you know, this is something that's created for us. So we can have more opportunities to be on more stages and to create other forms of art where we're in control of it.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the legal situation in Germany for sex workers?
Right. So Germany's legalized form of sex work, you have to get registered. You have to have your whore pass, basically, to be able to work here. You know, not everybody is going to do that. Not everybody can, especially as migrants, right? Because technically what's supposed to happen is that they might put this stamp on your passport and baby, ain't no way. Even if I was whoring right now, ain't no way anybody's putting that stamp on my goddamn passport, right? So that's what they're doing now. And what they're trying to do, I guess, to curb whatever risk that they have created in their mind is to impose a Nordic model of sex work in Germany, which is to penalize the clients for soliciting the services. I don't know in what business model it makes sense to penalize people that are patronizing your service, because it's just like, excuse me?
Yeah.
They're trying to impose that here. And we're pushing back against that this year. So in one of the ways that we're doing that is through a decriminalization campaign. It's called the DE campaign, which is like, it's about decrim. And it has different topics like, how are we going to decriminalize, destigmatize, deconstruct a lot of myths and ideas about sex work? So one of the ways that we do that is through art. So hotels is actually part of that big grand ongoing scheme for the next however many years to continue to normalize seeing us and understanding that like we're everywhere and we're also artists and we're also cooks and we're all of these things. Like we don't just suck dick. Who only sucks dick? Nobody just sucks dick, right? We all do. we all do a lot of things. So people, it's like weird that people are just like, how could you do this? And you have other gifts. Like, yeah, don't you suck dick? And then you, after you finish sucking the dick, do you not know how to cook a meal? You don't know how to make a sandwich, bitch? Like, I don't understand, you know? So that's part of the grand scheme. But also, like, you know, we're also doing it in like a more traditional format, like a media campaign where it's like interviews and factoids and stuff like that. So the DE campaign only just started this month. The official one that we're like online that just started this month. But hotels is definitely a part of that grand scheme to kind of keep pushing, throwing hoes in your face as much as we can. And that's one of the things that we're working on this year. Also, we have our two research projects. We have one on housing in Germany. So we're trying to gather information from different people that are living in Germany that have faced housing issues to try and gather information to see exactly what among the queer migrant, refugee, sex workers, whatever, like what is the cause of their housing issues? What are people's needs? How can we support them in fixing whatever issues that they're having? And that's supported by ILGA Europe, or like International Lesbian and Gay Alliance. So they're funding us. Mm-hmm. And then we have another research thing. We're supposed to put out some research findings. It was a project that we were doing with the European Sex Workers Alliance, ESWA, where basically there was research done on PrEP and sex work. And we are part of the team of people that are supposed to do the translation for the findings in the German language. So we have to have an event later on in the year where we're going to put out those results to different people, like our community, as well as maybe some legislative bodies as well, to talk about what those results are and how to basically get more HIV, AIDS, STI health information out to the public in German language based on what the sex worker community did. Okay. That research. So we're doing that. And we're also in preparation for the International AIDS Conference, which is happening in Munich in late July. We will be there performing hotels. And that's a big international event where, you know, a lot of groups from all around the world come to just discuss what they're doing around HIV, AIDS, STI health, reproductive health, and things like that. So we're starting in preparation now for that, because that's a really big conference. And we're not only going to perform there, we actually are, you know, we need to be there like pretty much every day of the conference to meet with funders, to see what the other groups are doing, attend the workshops, the seminars, whatever people are doing, and also have our, you know, our presence there. So yeah, it's going to be a big thing.
That's super exciting. You know, I would like to hear a little bit more about what it takes to register as a sex worker.
I have never had to register. I've only seen what other people go through. A lot of the work that I really do is about like these lived experiences, but that's not one of my lived experiences. But I have, you know, seen people kind of be very nervous about it going in, and sometimes eventually having to do it because, you know, you don't want to risk getting caught, because especially being a migrant, you know, you don't want to risk getting caught without your whore pass. But a lot of times too, like if you want to like work into the brothels, or like if you want to go work into a dungeon, you actually have to have it, because then the dungeons, you know, like they're liable and they can't actually do that. So that's about as far as the information goes that I can speak on. Sometimes it could be really difficult, you know, like being an independent worker, trying to find space to meet clients and trusting that it's safe, or, you know, even trying to get clients is, you know, rather challenging in order to be able to like work.
And unfairly impacts people that are maybe doing it full time, or that the only way that they could possibly work is through getting registered. Some of my friends that got registered say that they had to go to like the health amt, the Gesundheitsamt, and show them that they had to put a condom on a
condom on. Like, damn. Listen, my thing is with the stuff like this, like I would not be against it if they were doing this for all the citizens of the world. You know what I mean? Like everyone should know how to put a condom on. Everyone.
Do you know how to do
it? Like you should not be engaging in sex if you don't know how to put a condom on, if you don't know that stealthing is rape, if you don't, you know, you don't know how to like, you know, spot certain STIs. Like it's just fucking absurd. Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, make sure that the whores know how to do this. Like, what? It makes no sense. Yeah.
So as a collective, how are you outreaching and how are you getting sex workers to find out about what y'all do and to join and to collectivize? How did you get started in Berlin?
Well, I moved here and people knew that I had had this group and they told me about another woman that was here and also doing some great work. They're like, you should meet this person. And I was like, okay, I'll meet this person. And I met this person. I was like, hey, do you want to do this thing with me? She's like, yes. And that's kind of how it started. And, you know, having the web presence is, it makes, you know, it's helpful, you know, having a website, having the Instagram. A lot of it is word of mouth. A lot of it is, yeah, being online and people inquiring within and then kind of joining. It's really a very grassroots kind of way that it's done. There's really no particularly special way. Like, I'm about to start putting out some calls to get more members, but typically we don't need to, we don't do that. We just kind of get our members from people hearing about us either through online spaces or through other people or through maybe a little action that we may do here and there. And then they come on in. But I'm going to have a bit more of an aggressive approach this year to getting more people involved because there's a lot of opportunities that are coming up. And I want to make sure that people that are a part of this community get those opportunities to be able to do what they otherwise would be doing for free, you know, or be doing with people that they don't need to be doing it with, you know. So it's like, if you're going to give your energy some space to a space and you're not going to be compensated or and sometimes compensated fairly, why not just come here into this grassroots space that's actually led by us? Because sometimes as well, you know, there's spaces that are serving sex workers and they're not sex workers running these spaces. These are not their ideas. You know, this is not their leadership, but here it actually is like 100% that leadership. So yeah, people get involved in a very grassroots kind of way. And you know, being around, going and doing things like when I started, it was like just me, you know, and then you travel a bit. And then 10 years later, wow.
How are you all helping each other, I guess, is what I want to say. You know, what does the collective provide when you become a member, when you become part of it?
Well, you will definitely have your peers to be able to lean on to discuss a lot of issues that are going on personally or work-wise. I remember one time one of our members was harmed and we pretty much girl ganged it up to go out to be able to support this person, you know, like in the physical, like, okay, we going to kick some ass. Some of us were members, some of us were not, but whatever. As far as I'm concerned, all the black sex workers in the world are part of the group. They just haven't come here yet. So, you know, it's like, you're just an unofficial member, but you're a member. And yeah, we, you know, we have that space where you feel like you do have a community to, you know, to just to come to for whatever is happening. We get together. Sometimes we might meet each other and have some meals. We support each other on our projects because that, you know, the space, the BSWC is where people can come and incubate their ideas. You know, they can come here and be able to like put their ideas to life. Like if we've got funding, we'll give it to you and support you. You know, if we don't have no funding, we'll still support you in getting your project done. You can just come here like you're like, okay, I have a research idea and I want to do this thing here. And you come here and you do that and you get the support that's needed. Because sometimes, you know, you have projects that you need to be able to do, but you can't do it because you don't have the right team of people to help support it. So this is where you come and you're able to do that. Like, for instance, the research project. There's no way in hell that I would be able to do this by myself. So I need a team of, you know, even a team of like three people to come on with me to be able to get it done. So this is a space where you kind of can do that, you know, and you can make it black sex worker led and focused. And then when there's opportunities that is coming in, I personally, as the director, make sure that the people within the collective have a chance at those opportunities first. So before I go out and I'm like, hey, we have some money to pay for this. But, you know, if you're a part of the group already, you get first dibs at that. So you're able to, you know, to be able to support yourself financially by doing these different projects to keep the group going. So yeah, it's a way to also get paid for the things that you would otherwise not be getting paid to do within the movement.
So like projects like the research on PrEP, is that an example or?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, exactly. So I'm not going out into the ether and just like getting anybody that's like, hey, I've done research work before and they're not actually sex workers. You know, it's easier for me to like go to who is right next to me before I have to go outside of that circle to be able to give funds to put the money back into the community's hands.
Right. Are you also able to set rates as a community? Does that ever come up in terms of collectivizing what minimum rates are? Or yeah, how do you feel about that idea?
Minimum rates for like for services?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't fuck with that. If they want to have those conversations among like in our unofficial spaces, yeah, but as like a collective practice, no, we don't fuck with that because it's too legally tricky.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to get caught out there on some, oh, you were a madam. Nah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because those legalities get real tricky. They just find your little loopholes. Yeah, I don't. That's where I draw the line.
You said that you have branches also in West Africa, South
Ghana.
Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that like? What are some of the issues that are different there or relevant or something?
They're not different. They're never different. Mm-mm. It's all connected. It's all anti-LGBTQI+. It's all anti-sex work. It's all us trying to fight to exist in this world. It's not different. Mm-mm. It's just in some, like for instance, in Accra, you know, they just passed that anti-gay bill. You know, you can't be gay. You find out you're gay, yeah, you're going to jail. You might die. So, you know, that's not happening in Germany, technically, mm-hmm, legally, but you know that there is, you know, still a lot of anti-gay actions that happen throughout the world, right? And it's just some places it's more dire than others. South Africa is very close to decriminalization, but of course it got paused, right? Like when everybody thought, oh my God, this is it. It just got paused. So, you know, it's not different. It's just, we're at different levels of fighting the game. Like some are just, it's just more detrimental for some of us than it is. It's all the same fight. It's all the same shit. It's all connected. It's all intersectional. None of it is different. None of it. There's no difference. It's just right now, in Germany, you can be gay. In the US, you can actually be gay, but that don't mean somebody might not try to fuck you up because you're gay. You know what I mean? And get away with it still.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Why do you feel like it's important to establish a collective of Black sex workers specifically?
Because anti-Blackness is rampant. It's everywhere. And like in New York, when they began to pass that legislation, like the SESTA-FOSTA, you know, which is pretty much equating sex work with sex trafficking and lying that they're trying to protect children, whatever. They're not. Did you see? If they were trying to protect, if the government was trying to protect children, they would be all up in Nickelodeon, gymnastics. They would be all on that, like white on rice, but they keep fucking with us. It's not the same thing. It's not, we're not endangering children. We're not being trafficked. We're technically trafficking ourselves because we need to survive in some cases, right? But anti-Blackness is so rampant. And even in New York, when I was a baby hoe trying to lead spaces that were falling apart and needed a new leadership, I tried to get in and I was stopped. So a lot of times not allowed to enter these spaces, we end up having to create our own way, right? So I had to create the collective because there were people that were just like, oh, no, I'm not going to give you an opportunity. I'm going to pass it on to another friend who looks more like me. And then your shit falls apart. So since you don't want to give me a chance, I'll just start something else. Because when it comes to like, you know, legislation like anti-gay or anti-sex work or anti-whatever, a lot of it is always going to, the weight is going to fall on Black people. And we're going to be the most affected because we're, you know, hated worldwide. So the only way for us to have a space that's safe, that is led by us with our ideas and our history and all of this inherited practices for liberation, is that we have to create the spaces ourselves. So, you know, creating this Black sex worker space is, it's the same as any other Black spaces that have to be created. It had to be created because nobody's making room for us anyplace else.
And we need to have our own spaces carved out where it's coming from our history and our ideas.
When you started out, what, take me back there. Like, who were you at that time when you started organizing? Like, what passion brought you to that sense that, like, we have to collectivize?
Well, I was such a happy hoe back then. Now I'm more a cynical hoe now. Then I was so happy and I was like, yes, liberation, this feels great. Now I'm like, So back then I was super happy, loving it because, you know, I grew up hearing this was bad. It was bad to get paid for sex. And then when you finally got paid for sex, I was like, wait, what? This feels fantastic. Are you kidding me? I mean, I was a stripper, but I was never a hoe. So I was very liberated, you know, like brand new. And I also suffered a lot under like these anti-sex worker ideologies. I had a really rough time like raising my children. So I really wanted, you know, at the time when I was fighting for my children and my little family to be together, there was nothing. I didn't know of any support. I didn't know of any organizations. I had to go through that alone. And trying to explain to people, like, I should be able to be a stripper and still be a parent, that was not flying right with people, you know? And I just was like, if I could have been such a better parent, I could have been such a better person, I could have probably thrived if I had a community, if I had people supporting me. So when I discovered, like, the sex worker rights movement, I was like, oh, my God, I didn't even know that this was here. What if this was what if I had known this was here that whole time? And I didn't. So I really was like driven to try to find a space, you know, to come together so that all these other hoes could feel like supported and not, you know, have to go through what I went through by myself. Because it was nothing that I knew of anyway.
Wow. So how many years into sex work did you find the, I don't know, strength, the ability to, the capacity to start coordinating with others and to give them that space?
How many years into sex work? I mean, listen, I didn't discover the groups until like damn near 20 years in. I didn't know that they existed. Yeah. So it was a long time. It was a long time off and on. And then I started doing like full service work over a decade ago. And that's when I don't even remember how I found these spaces, but they somehow came about. But that was like 10 plus years in the game, you know?
Mm-hmm. How do you feel like it's changed in the last 10 years?
In terms of organizing?
Yeah.
I mean, so much has changed, you know, like a lot of funding has opened up for sex workers, still not enough, but a lot of funding now has opened up for us to be able to do a lot of the things that we do. Funders are, people are listening. You know, there has been some shift in legislation a little bit, you know, we're making like recommendations to different governments to try and change their like anti-sex work, labor, anti-trans, gay, all of that. We're doing all of that stuff that we weren't. I guess we were doing it, but now it just seems more like prevalent. You see us being depicted better in mainstream media. Not a lot, but there has been some really amazing examples that I've written about. For like university publication, like, oh my God, it actually has shifted a little bit. It's a lot like racism where it's like so much has changed yet so little at the same time, you know? So a lot has changed. Our coalition group has, you know, we've gotten like ECOSOC status. Don't ask me what that means because I don't remember. To be able to get a pass into the UN, to go into the UN, which is an unbelievable thing that has happened for a bunch of hoes, right? So we are able to, we have that leverage now. We're able to, we have our UN passes. We can go up in there and make some noise. None of us, to my knowledge, have had that. If any other sex worker group has had it, we don't know yet, or a coalition, we don't know yet, but it's, you know, it's been done. And you see a lot of like, it's particularly in the US, different politicians are winning their races, pushing decriminalization sex work narrative, which is pretty amazing. So it's shifted greatly, but also not so much.
Yeah, there was an ad around which really said it in a nutshell for me. The bowl. I was like, I keep seeing
free
that
bowl
around.
Job.
free bowl job. I'm like,
I would say, I'm not even seeing the ad anymore, but yeah, free bowl job. Like, for what? Like, are you joking right now? Don't do that.
No, it's like trying to be as though we've made steps and like, oh yeah, we're all cool with sex work. You know, this is just like we're normalizing it, and yet absolutely no kind of mainstream knowledge about what are the key right. issues.
It should have been like bowl jobs should never be free.
Right?
I think I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to do that to the next one. I'm still going to work on that thing. I think I'm going to do that one. Bowl jobs should never be free. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm doing in that shit. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think it's so powerful, the idea of just finding out that you can earn money for sex, like that moment that you're talking about. Like, it's such a somatic moment too, just like, wow. And I loved hearing stories from the sex workers that were featured on stage during Hotels, sort of talk about that moment and that empowerment. What do you feel like telling those stories is doing for some of those sex workers?
I mean, going by what they have said, you know, liberating, very fun, exciting. They're happy for the opportunity. I can't speak really for them individually, but we have a good time. You know, we have a good time in rehearsals, trying to develop these performances and tell these stories in a way that's going to be impactful and powerful to the audience and to us, you know, ourselves. I think we're having a good time. Some of us, you know, are coming out for the first time on stage, and it's an amazing experience that we're all having. But individual feelings I can't speak on, but I can say collectively that's the energy that I get, and that's what I've heard over the past few years of doing this show now.
When you say they're coming out as sex workers, coming out as queer, or both?
Sex workers.
One thing I noticed was just that a lot of people on stage are queer in their sexuality, their gender. How do you feel that queerness interacts with sex work?
You know, I feel like to be a sex worker is to be queer. I feel like it's one, and it's, maybe from a Black perspective, I don't know about the other perspective. I mean, I don't know. I feel like, I mean, maybe I'm just speaking from my own for my own self, because I am queer, but I kind of feel like it's one and the same. I feel like in this industry, you have to be so flexible, you know, because you're not, if you want to be successful in this industry, you can't just be like, yeah, I can't do that. I mean, you can, but do you want to make money or not? You know, like, I've heard like foolish questions like, oh, but if I'm not attracted to the guy, it's like, are you trying to make money or are you looking for a husband? Which one is it? You know, so I feel like in order to be successful, you kind of have to be flexible in this industry. And sometimes being flexible is like being open to who you're going to see, what you're going to do. So I think like it's a very queer kind of workspace, because you have to be pretty much open to everyone and everything. Listen, you can be as restrictive as you want to be. That's also the freedom of this industry. But like, I feel like to really... Like those that really embody it really understand like just how flexible and open-minded that they need to be to different experiences and different people and different ideas and different desires. And I feel that all of that is just like very queer.
Oh, absolutely. I love that. It makes a lot of sense. When's the next time we can see you all? When is the next time that we can see you perform?
Well, I'm supposed to be performing on April 12th. I don't even know if I'm going to do that, because I'm like, I do a very different kind of burlesque now. And I'm just like, you want me to do what? And I don't know if I can do it. I don't know, because it's so clean and so tame now. It, like, before it used to be energy and I would be open to anything. Now I'm just like, baby, if I can't just like throw this boa and this fan, I got nothing for you. But you know what, too? I'm also into more ugly things these days. I kind of want to embrace my... What's her name again? The woman from Germany that used to do the ugly shit. Oh, I did the play with her, with Ludwig, a couple years ago. I'm going to have to find her name. But all her shit was, like, ugly. So now I'm thinking about it. That's it. Because the thing is, I don't be wanting to get dressed up. Like, fuck that. Like, I'm not putting on that makeup. I don't want to do that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I actually think I'm going to do this show. And it's just going to be me coming home from work, looking like this, you get what you get. And I don't know, I might read a book or something. Maybe I keep forgetting that I can keep it ugly because I'm very much into that. Like, why does everything have to be like, I do pretty burlesque now, but like, why do I have to do that? So this actually, the show that I am about to do is actually an opportunity for me to do that most ugly shit, you know, just like ugly, just, and by ugly, I mean this, I know I'm not ugly, but you know how the world is. It's just like, I'm just going to do normal burlesque.
That's and beautiful.
I'm going to burlesque me and just like come home and just take the, I'm not even going to put on the makeup properly. I'm just going to just, that's what you get. So that's April 12th. The Collective Hotel, you can see it in Munich, in Cologne.
Nice. Okay, yeah. Perfect. My last question, maybe it has to do with this, you know, being the real body on stage is how have you felt as you have been aging, like how you feel in your body as a performer, as you age? I mean, I know I've been feeling it in my bones.
Yeah, I've got to go back to yoga and to my workout because when I don't do it, it really affects me. I just be feeling stiff as hell on stage. And that's the thing, too. That's why also the burlesque had to change is I'm like, this jumping up business, this is too much. I like it. And I could do it, but I really have to train my body into it. And I just haven't found time to really like find these classes. But yeah, it's rough. Like as you get older, you really have to be fit. Not because you need to have a flat stomach, but because I need to be able to be on that stage. I need to have that stamina to be on that stage, even though it's just 5 minutes, just the stamina to be able to get up and pack up my bags and go out, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, otherwise I'd be tired and I just don't like the way I feel, you know, and I move differently and I want to have more range of motion in my movement. So yeah, it's time for me to get back into it. Yeah, you just can't. As you get old, you cannot. That's that shit that we can do at 19. You cannot. You like, because you're getting older, you have to be in that gym. Mm-hmm. And if that gym is your living room, it's just whatever. You just got to be doing it because then you start falling apart, you know? And it also messes with my mental health. So it's time for me to go back to my weightlifting because I can't take it. It's just like, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder a lot, like, what it would be like to be a performer at 70, you know, and also, like, accepting that, like, for sure, my body's going to be so different. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen some people, I've seen a lot of women do it, and, like, you go to Burlesque Hall of Fame, and the legends are there, and they, you know, they're up there, and they look so beautiful, and it's amazing. So, like, you know, yeah, I might have to be on that stage at 70. So, like, there's no time than now to be, like, lift them weights, child. Keep it flexible because you want to be looking like you're in your 50s at 70, you know, like I'm talking about movement wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there any last words you want to say? Anything that's important for folks to know that you'd like to say as a final word?
Yes. Donate to sex workers. And if you've got wills and trust in things, make sure you sign that right on over to us. Not to be shady, but like if you're going to leave your money to anybody, leave it to these grassroots groups. Donate to Black sex workers. We don't get a lot of funding. Sex workers in general don't get a lot of funding, but also Black sex workers are at a disadvantage because of racism and things like that. So yeah, you know, donate, support us. And it's not just important. It's not enough to just throw money at us. It's also important to come to our events and be there in person, listen to what we have to say, learn about what we're doing, hop on to our actions, be there in person for the demos, for everything, and speak up for us.
You just heard from the incredible Edible Akinos, a show-stopping entertainer who has curated, headlined, and performed in productions from New York to Europe. She is founder of the Black Sex Worker Collective, author, performance artist, an educator in the fields of sexuality, HIV, and human rights, and an activist for sex worker rights. You can read more about her in the show notes. I'm Mad Kate, and you've been listening to Sweat, a series of conversations about performance and performativity of the sexual and sexualized body and work. The theme music was composed by me and features the voice of performer and actress Lori Baldwin. Sweat airs every second Tuesday of the month at 13 hours Central European Time on Collaboradio, Free Radio's Berlin Brandenburg, broadcasting on 88.4 FM in Berlin, 90.7 FM in Potsdam, and streaming online at fr-bb.org. Afterwards, it's available for streaming wherever you get your podcasts. Sweat is an unpaid labor of love. If you have the means to financially support the show, you'll find a link to my Patreon in the show notes. Your support is warmly appreciated. Thanks so much. Until next time.